Mary,
I said podcast in the first one, and then I started to say it with the second one, but my brain shut off, and I was like, wait, what's the word? And it was all very awkward in my brain.
I also almost just forgot what I was doing mid-song.
Like, my brain went somewhere else, and my body said the first one, and then I jumped back into my body, and I was like, oh god, what's happening?
Welcome to Married to Who, a podcast where a couple of couples watch Doctor Who for the very first time. My name is Jake. With me are those couples, Cody, Sam, Jill, and Alex. Terry is also here. This week, we're here to talk about not one, but two brand new Doctor Who episodes. Space Babies, written by Russell T. Davies, directed by Julianne Robinson, aired May 10th or 11th, 2024, depending on where you live. And The Devil's Chord, written by Russell T. Davies, directed by Ben Chessel, aired May 10th or 11th, 2024, again, depending on where you live. We are not going to do everyone's favorite podcast segment this week. Cody's going to get a break. You guys, frankly, don't deserve him. So, instead, we're going to talk about these kind of together. I think it's too hard to talk about one and then break and then talk about the other. So we're just going to just have a general conversation about the two episodes that dropped. Cody, what'd you think of these episodes?
I think you saved some lives by having us watch both of the episodes and then doing the podcast, because goddamn. This is both. I liked the second one, Jake.
Yeah. There are some messages in our Discord. Why would they drop two episodes? I think we all know why. One of them's a lot better than the other one.
Could you imagine if they floated that one for a week and just let everybody have second thoughts?
You have the... Jake said that you're louder, and you have the microphone 3 feet away, directly in front of your... He's literally put it in front of his face and moved it away from
me. This is Cody's podcast time.
Hey, Sam, what'd you think of these?
Same. One good. One not good.
Okay, I'm taking the microphone back.
Reverse order.
give me like a... No, I was going to say give me a scale, but that's kind of like giving something a score.
Yeah, the thing we do every week, Jake.
Jill, what'd you think of these?
The second episode was great.
And?
The first episode was an episode of Doctor Who that was new and had, you know, characters that are enjoyable. There were a lot of enjoyable things about it. Not my favorite, but that's fine.
Not your best when you're trying to put your best foot forward for a new season of a new show you're trying to launch on a new platform. But, you know, that's why they decided to repackage it as episode 2 and have Church on Ruby Road be episode 1.
Smart.
Alex?
Smart.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I didn't think the first episode was all that bad. It just wasn't as good as the second episode. And yeah, I'm trying to think of like the storylines, and like, you wouldn't have to do Space Babies first. Like, you could put that later in the season, maybe mid-season. Like, it's kind of weird, unless they have nothing but bangers and like, well, we got to put this somewhere.
Well, the way it was recorded, though, he explained the entirety of Doctor Who.
It was the exposition dump episode.
I think that's going to be continuing. I think that's going
to
be all season.
As we'll get to it a little bit, it's very reminiscent of a story we've seen before, and that did this a lot.
Yeah.
Terry, what do you think?
I agree with Alex. Like, the first episode had a good storyline. I just hated how it was done. There were a lot of exposition, which all the new Who people need to have so they understand what's happening. It's been a while since we've seen Ruby and everything. But the second episode, perfect. Like, it picked up where it needed to with the main storyline and everything.
That goes into the complaints I was having about how the rollout of this season was planned just from the jump. Like, it should have been right after Christmas. Like, have your David Tennant specials, roll into your Christmas special, and then the season should have started January 8th or whatever, somewhere around there. But when you're trying to launch a whole new show, treat it as a new thing, reach a new audience and a new platform, like, you have to do this because you're trying to explain a lot of stuff to hopefully a larger audience.
Yeah, I thought it was weird with all of, like, the Christmas references and the time of year we're in being May.
Well, they're referencing Ruby and her origins, but
I know.
But also they're putting a lot on people bothering to watch the first one, The Church on Ruby Road, which hopefully they did if they didn't watch it over Christmas. But anyway.
Jake, what'd you think?
After I was done watching the first episode, I was ready to end this podcast. I thought it was the worst episode ever. I've watched it again. I watched people on YouTube watch it. I've listened to podcasts. I'm a little less harsh about it right now, but I was just so excited for this season to begin. It's been such a long time. And, you know, even though I liked a lot of the stuff in the Jody era, I was never, like, super hyped for when it was going to start. But here we had RTD again. Everything I've seen from Shooty has been so great. I was just really hyped for this. And for Space Babies to be the first episode was just a huge bummer.
You potato skinned yourself.
Yeah. But then second one I enjoyed a lot. But as I'm thinking about it, as you know, it's been, what, 5 days since the episodes aired? I am wondering how much of my enjoyment was the story being good and how much of it was just Jinx Monsoon being really good.
It was all of it. I'll answer that for you.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Good is good.
Well, then you look back at the David Tennant episodes, like how much of that was good writing and how much of it was just Neil Patrick Harris cooking.
Yeah.
Both
of those characters can cook.
Apparently we're getting gods. Russell's talked about that. Russell T. Davies has talked about that. The whole campaign leading into this, the tour. What is it? Promotional tour that they've had. He's been talking about the gods are coming, and if we've seen two of them so far, and if those are the guest actors we're getting, then fuck yeah, keep them coming.
I am all about Pantheon villain arcs. I am all aboard. I could
really
not
are.
Have been any more excited. I fucking love, like, the arc that involves the stepladder finals to the essentially the one who waits. Like,
we're
what sort of
it.
HP Lovecraft ass kind of name is that? Like, we're about to fight an outer god who's been waiting 16 trillion years for the Doctor. It's just cool. And the fact that it was tied into the Toymaker. Not gonna lie, for me, it took a hot minute in episode 2. Maybe I was just like bummed out from the first episode. I was like, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
It took me a minute in that it rapidly became what I would probably put in my top 3 episodes of all time.
Nice. Yeah, as soon as Jinx came out of the piano to kill that dude, I was like, yeah, this is better. I mean,
it was so good. And then the reveal of Maestro to the Doctor through the piano and like entering with the giggle. Like, as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, shit. And then he said it and I was like, fuck.
So that was something I actually was kind of nervous about, because now you're expecting people to remember stuff from the David Tennant specials. And those weren't included in this season 1 of Doctor Who, that how Disney Plus is marketing it and bundling it. And so I would have liked a little flashback there instead of just the Doctor going, "Remember I told you about the toy maker?" and then moving on.
That, yeah, that would have been super easy to do. And, like, damn near free. It's already been shot. Just put it in.
Speaking of something super easy to do, I just have one more little nitpick about this episode that I just want to get off my chest before we move on. At the end, when John Lennon and Paul McCartney show up and play the Forbidden Note on the piano, they're, like, I would have liked, during the story, just, like, 4 seconds of insert shots that show that they're in the area. Like, maybe when Jinx is walking through the alley and the Doctor makes it silent, maybe show the two of them, like, entering the alley as she's leaving. Or show them entering the building and seeing something weird. Literally 4 seconds of insert shots just to show any kind of motivation why they would be coming up those stairs looking at a piano and deciding to play the notes.
Beatles Ex Machina, bro.
Yeah. I thought it was weird that the Beatles weren't more part of the solution. Like, I thought, okay, we're going to go see the Beatles and then they're going to get wrapped up with the Doctor and it's going to be a thing. Like, I think they could have been, they could have been part of the Bard battle.
But I think you're going to have the Beatles. You either have to, like, full on have the Beatles, or they have to be like, it has to be like, let's kill Hitler. Like, we see Hitler, we punch Hitler, we put him in the closet. Hitler's gone. Like, the Beatles, like, you see them, they make a joke out of it, and then you can't have too much Beatles, otherwise you'll start nitpicking the impressions. Or if you're gonna have Beatles play music in the music battle, like you're saying, it's gotta be the best fucking music ever, and then that's a lot of pressure.
Well, yeah, it's the Beatles music. Like, why wouldn't they just play it?
Hey, Murray Gold, invent the best music ever, please.
No, I'm saying use a Beatles song that they were supposedly writing at that time.
They don't have that Michael Jackson money.
I was like, what does it cost to license a Beatles song?
Well, Michael Jackson bought their entire oeuvre, the rights to it. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Like in the 90s.
If the Disney can't buy something, it's not for sale.
Right. But I heard that the budget for these episodes was about $7 million per episode. Damn. So we're still not in, like, Mandalorian money. We're definitely not in Game of Thrones money. Like, Game of Thrones was $100 million a season.
How much do those babies cost? 5 cents? Yeah,
$7 million per baby?
Exposure. They're paid in exposure.
Oh my god.
Okay.
Like, there's AI that does better than the babies.
Right?
Are you talking about, like, the animated mouths?
Yes.
I feel like that was absolutely AI.
Like, deepfake.
The E-Train baby in 2002 was better than that on those fucking
that's
commercials.
So true.
That's really good.
Well, while we're on space babies, I mentioned that there's literal just lines of dialogue taken from previous RTD episodes, specifically. Like, you could call this a remake of The End of the World, his previous second episode. So if we're considering this a second episode, the similarities between them are absolutely insane. Like,
the scene where she was looking over the planet and was getting teary-eyed about humanity getting into space.
They're on a space station.
Yeah.
There's the shot where the window opens and we see the planet. He explains the TARDIS translating, do it in a little nicer way than they did to Rose. He does the jiggery pokery to her cell phone like he did with Rose. She calls her mom like Rose did. And then at the end, they go back to Earth to be like, oh, good, everything's still normal back home, even though we were way in the future. Because, you know, this is 20,000 years in the future versus Rose's 5 billion years. Yeah.
Apple something.
But it was super, I mean, it hit all those beats. So it's just like episode 2. Everyone's got to know what's going on. Here's all the
beats.
You
know what it's missing?
Time travel works.
Britney Spears.
Ooh, maybe that's all.
Britney Spears?
Toxic. They had the jukebox and it played Toxic in that episode.
That's sick. Damn.
Yeah,
yeah, they missed that.
Go ahead, Jill.
Right, that was that episode.
It's all right. We're still talking about Britney. My takeaway is, like, first of all, I liked just the relationship development between the Doctor and Ruby, where it, like, really seems purely platonic. I mean, it should be.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that's just unique, and I love that. Like, they're just, like, living life together, like, hanging out with babies. Like, they're both, like, loving people and whatever, like, care about other people and each other without making it a love story, which is refreshing. But my favorite part was the, I'm looking for it and not easily finding it, but the Doctor's, like, freedom speech, where he has, like, you know, all the good things about being the Doctor mixed in with, like, terrible things about being the Doctor and ending it with, like, the ultimate freedom.
There was a bit, and, like, go ahead.
I don't know. It was just, like, such an, like, we see all these, like, very moving, like, Doctor speeches, like, at the end of episodes and whatever, but, like, this is where it counts, like, throwing it into, like, someone you're getting to know and be friends with and, like, travel with. And, like, it's so real without being, like, over-the-top emotional. I love that.
Contrasting that with Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, who never told her companions anything and kept everything to herself. They were just along for the ride. Half the time, they weren't a part of the story at all. And now the Doctor's just like, yeah, all this terrible stuff happened. I've dealt with it, and now I'm good. And so I'm happy to talk about it. It's just,
that's a good point.
It's a refreshing change. It's even like David Tennant. When Martha had to, like, put the chair down in the middle of the alley on New Earth and be like, I'm not fucking leaving until you tell me something. And then he, like, told her about Gallifrey and everyone being dead.
Even just, like, helping her stay connected, like, with the one phone call your mom.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's a different Doctor than we've seen previously, where it's, like, a Doctor trying to, like, not really caring about that bridge. Like, it's nice to see that this Doctor does care about that.
Well, we do have that exact same scene in Eccleston's second episode. But, and I guess he does do the phone thing to everyone's phone, but it is nice to see it. And with Eccleston, he only did it because Rose was flipping her shit. And he's just like, all right, I gotta calm this white chick down before she goes nuts. And then, but with Shooty, he's just like, she just, like, sets up, like, oh man, my mom is so far away. And he's like, oh, here, like, I can do this now.
I like the play and I like the replay because it was a hit when Rose did it. So, like, supposedly new crowd, you want to just reintroduce, like, the impossible of the Doctor. And I think that's a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
But I am mad in the, I forget the name of the second episode, but
The Devil's Cord.
When they go back to her time and everything's destroyed because they didn't do anything, they should have used the phone mechanic to push that point. Like, if she should have tried to call her mom and it go like, could not complete
right.
Call as dialed or whatever.
Well, I think that's further proof that these were not designed to come out on the same day. I think if they were, then that probably would happen.
Yeah.
I mentioned that he takes from his own second ever episode. He takes a little bit from Stephen Moffat's second episode also. Just some plot beats, not even like the, you know, bringing the crowd in or the viewers in. But if you think about it, there's because the Beast Below is Moffat's second episode, so we've got a beast below that we're all scared of. The companion gets vomited on here, she gets snotted on, and at the end they realize that it's a friend and they're not supposed to kill it.
Did they realize it was a friend? I don't think it is actually a friend. The Doctor just wants to preserve all unique life,
The babies all cheered when they let it live.
Yeah, but it's still in isolation in the bay.
It's,
like, they're not going to bring it.
It's playing its part. I tried finding something from Chibnall's second episode, and I couldn't. Chibnall's first season's a disaster. How do you guys feel about all the fourth wall breaking in the second episode? I've heard some people complaining.
I didn't like it from not the Doctor.
I didn't see the point of Maestro's fourth wall break.
I didn't like.
It's not like comedy. It's just,
I'm kind of the other way around. Like, I think because if she's a god,
then Cody said.
Let her, like, she should be able to do things that the Doctor can't, like break the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
But the Doctor's done it before.
Yeah, the doctor.
Yeah, but
done
I don't remember an episode where it happened this many times in one episode.
No.
We did have a conversation after that episode that was basically like, yeah, well, like when two individuals are so omnipresent and all powerful, you kind of have the expectation they understand the medium in which they're presented. So it kind of makes sense in that aspect. I just think it could have been done somewhere where it has more value to the viewer. I don't know.
Is that alluding to the Doctor being godlike?
Oh, absolutely.
Since they're both doing it?
Some people wondering if this is all part of the story. Like, if we're going to find out that maybe one of these gods we're going to interact with is, like, going to put them in the land of fiction, or maybe they already are in the land of fiction. Not only is he making comments like, oh, I thought that was non-diegetic music, and, you know, having a musical number at the end, but also saying, like, oh, we should visit the Star Trek people, which he asks if it's like a teleporter like Star Trek. So maybe we'll get to a point where we find out this entire season the Doctor's been trapped in the land of fiction, and maybe that's what Ruby is, and that's what we're going to find out.
Do you think every episode ends in a giant musical number?
No, I think that was a one-off, but it's definitely something Russell wanted to do.
I mean, there was a giant musical number in the Christmas Story, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like...
Well, that was considerably smaller than this.
The episode just, like, ended 5 minutes early, and they're like, what do we do now?
Well, I saw a clip of Murray Gold being interviewed. They put up on YouTube, like, a 10-minute making of each episode. And he was like, I knew early days there was going to be a song called There's Always a Twist. So he had to come up with that. He's like, I wanted it to be a song where you could do the twist to it. And then, so this is like one of the first things he knew. So this was an early days desire.
MVP, song's a banger.
Was it?
I enjoyed it.
No.
Yeah, it was great.
I would not call it a banger.
Oh, damn. I mean, how about a bop? Is it a bop?
I just wanted a good old-fashioned Beatles song that they had to pay $1 trillion to put into the show.
They had to pay Blanket and whatever her nuts are.
I love the reveal of, like, how music was stolen. Like, they're like, oh, we're going to listen to the Beatles, and it's just absolute trash.
Oh, hilarious.
So funny.
Loved it.
I
don't know who Celia was. Was that the name of the girl?
Celia Black, or Cilla. Cilla Black. She's
OBE,
a real...
by the way.
She's a singer from Liverpool at that time who probably would have been at that studio.
You say she's a Scouse, bruv?
Okay.
You know who wasn't in Liverpool? Anyone who made this show. Everything, including the Abbey Road sidewalk, was done in Cardiff. Russell refuses to leave.
Really?
Cardiff.
Holy
it looked,
shit.
It looked a lot like Abbey Road. That was crazy.
So we can go to Cardiff and get an Abbey Road picture without all the traffic?
Holy
is
shit.
That's
saying?
How big your green screens are. Because they basically painted the crosswalk in an area that looked kind of like Abbey Road. And then put some old cars in, some real old cars. And then about four cars down,
love that.
Two, like, building-size green screens to kind of fill the rest.
You mean they didn't actually turn the road into a giant piano?
Where it lit up? That was
fun. Yeah, I would do that. Empower your community to play sick beats.
Another thing I saw in one of Millie Gibson's interviews, she said, like, singing and dancing and all this singing and dancing and like instrument playing she's had to do was not a part of her audition at all. So like they never asked her if she could sing or do any of that stuff. And then it's like she got cast and then Russell wrote everything and he's like, oh, I'm sure she'll be fine.
So is it her singing and playing?
Well, she doesn't sing in this one.
Right. But like,
previous
episode.
Note sung at the
end.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was her. I mean, she sang in the Goblin song.
Oh, I'll
have to go back and look at that. I saw her dancing, and she looked quite uncomfortable.
Oh, I didn't think so. Also, the dancers, chef's kiss.
if you're going to be like an actress or an actor, like you gotta be able to sing and dance, right? Like you don't just be in theater and not do that.
No. Terry's a triple threat.
Tell that to Robert De Niro. Tell him to go sing and dance.
Yeah, there's some that only stick to like the craft of just only like emoting and stuff like that. There's the singing and dancing is sometimes above some other actors and things.
If you could dance, you're going to get jobs. There's people that need just dancers in the background.
And some people just don't have the body coordination to do it. So unless you need someone to like falter, then you can do that.
They also didn't have a ton of time. So like, you know, their dances on the Abbey Road crosswalk, they were like improvising those, or like they had like a choreographer there, but they were all just going over it at the time.
Do you think Shooty was also surprised by the amount of singing and dancing? Because he seems in his element.
He seemed genuinely pissed that he had to sing the Goblin King song when in interviews for that. Like he can clearly like hold a tune, but he does not like singing and does not think he's very good at it.
I thought he's been great.
Well, I mean, you come up through theater and musical theater. I'm sure like everyone he knows is like amazing at it. So I'm sure he's self-conscious. Like around us, he's probably better than all of us except Jill. But I'm sure with everyone he knows is like way better than him.
Jill's got a stank face after that.
Jill sings and plays music for a living. Shooty.
Yeah, she's really good. She doesn't think she's good, but she's really good.
Shooty would blow me out of the water. No. Also, usually when I hang out with Shooty, we're not, you know, singing and dancing, so I have no comparison. Fucking.
Yeah, they're doing other things. We went that way. Jake got it.
Okay.
You didn't get the memo?
I just like your, when he's around us. Like, oh yeah, you know.
All those hands.
Okay, Space Babies.
No,
I'm good, I like thanks. Every time that, why every time the doctor is like, babies. Space yes. Babies.
What?
She was yes. Like, fuck.
Jill was saying that too.
I was so annoyed.
I was like, why is it different?
Just is that like a babies. Union thing? They can't just call them babies.
Well, and it wasn't even like thing. A oops, I'll learn next time. Just like every single time. Ugh, hated that.
I don't know why that was a thing. Also, Bridgerton lady.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And. Yeah. I really enjoyed the voice changing from
the like, nanny
correcting
filter.
Her language. That gave me
I
the
love
giggles.
The line, all babies will go to the upper levels or they won't get their expletive dinner.
Yeah.
I think I added a syllable in there, but.
The doctor said.
Did enjoy that.
Something about what the hell? What was that?
Oh, he wanted weird. To know what the hell's going on with the ship because it was like falling apart on the top down or bottom middle down. I don't know. It was like on fire at the bottom.
Does the doctor swear?
No.
Oh, yeah. Tennant said hell all does. The time. Hell's not a swear word. But for some, but like, but bloody Poddy is. It is.
Did anyone else think that the. When the doctor and Ruby saw all the babies in their motorized carts, that they looked like Daleks running around.
Oh, yeah, I was probably thinking more Wally.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw just like when Wally. Like the doctor would show up on a Dalek ship and they're all suddenly like, what's going on? And they're just like spinning around and talking and crazy. It's like, this is that again, but they're just infants instead. It's like, oh my God. Wouldn't it be great if they just turned into Daleks?
The thing that was getting me was, like, the main baby, I think Eric.
Eric.
Always looked so sad, even right. When the line was so happy.
Yep.
I was watching, and he said, his line was, I'm so happy, I love you, Ruby. And I just yelled, tell your face.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's got like, oh, God, get me out of here, eyes.
Why is this chick holding me?
That's how it's always going to be, unless they edit it.
The baby that was the captain, she was the only one that like looked...
She was very good.
Looked happy all the time.
Yeah.
I love the baby that's like, I pull these strings. I don't know what they do, but I pull them very hard.
Yes! That one was good. I did like that. See, there were some good things like the in contrivances there somewhere.
Of like the lady doesn't want to show herself to the babies, but it's just dumb. It's like, oh, I don't want them to, yep. I don't want to see them die. Well, maybe you should go in there and help them run this fucking ship then.
So do you think, because I was thinking about that, she was running the ship. They were just pulling levers that maybe didn't do anything. Is that right?
No, they were doing stuff at her instruction.
Oh.
Because she was okay. Still the nanny.
And like these babies are like 26 years old, right?
They're
like,
six.
Oh.
But we do see the one baby, like it's when we first get there. I think it's Eric being like, oh, pressure on unit whatever is overheating. I got to try figuring this out. He's like, it's the only time any of them are like very technical. And then they just drop all that right away. Yeah, I pretty much made the whole episode just for the crack about anti-abortion people.
I was just going to bring it up. You can cut this if you want, but abortion undertones?
Well, it's not undertones. So say it out loud.
Yeah.
Say it louder.
And, you know, cool. There's some other stuff in there that I can't even remember right now.
Ooh, the doctor. I love that he's got his suspicions about Ruby and that, like, he was scanning her at the end of the episode of, like, just to see what abnormalities and stuff are happening within her. She has a lot of, like, Clara vibes for me of just, like, there's something weird with her, like, what's happening, like, storyline with Ruby. So I'm excited to see if he figures it out early.
We've had the snowfall three times, right?
Yeah.
In two episodes?
Twice when it wasn't supposed to be happening.
Well, I thought one of them was in the TARDIS when he was scanning her, and then the other one was on the ship, and then the third one was when she was, like, held captive by the...
Maestro. I didn't see snow in the TARDIS.
Oh, maybe I was just thinking that then. Never mind.
Is that the bad wolf of the season?
Snow? No, it's Ruby.
What's the snow turn into? Ruby snow? Bloody snow? Snow blood?
Actually, the bad wolf of this season, children, is Susan Twist, who's an actress who has been in every episode so far, playing different characters. Maybe not every. I don't know if she was in all the David Tennant specials, but...
And the song.
Shut up. When the Doctor and Donna meet... what's his nuts? Sir... Gravity Guy?
Isaac Newton.
When they meet Sir Isaac Newton, there's a woman sweeping when he walks out of the house. That's this actress, Susan Twist. Then... In Church on Ruby Road, some lady in the crowd, while Ruby's, like, performing with her band, yells out a song for them to play. That's Susan Twist. She has a credit on the TARDIS wiki in Space Babies, but I don't know what it is. She's not in IMDb for that one, but fans are saying she's in there. In The Devil's Chord, she's the woman who sells them a cup of tea for half a crown, and they're like, holy shit, half a crown? That's insane. So we have this recurring actor playing different people across time zones popping up in every episode.
And Jake, I agree with Sam. The song was every story has a twist.
Oh my God, it goes deep.
What is
all
it?
The way to the top. This thing goes all the way to the top.
Yeah, the in this one, I didn't go back. Like, probably the song she yells in Church on Ruby Road means something. But in this one, she says, I'm Margaret Lockwood in The Wicked Lady. So I looked her up to be like, oh, maybe there's a clue. Margaret Lockwood did play a character in The Wicked Lady called Barbara.
All right.
Barbara's a Time Lord.
Well, Barbara's Barbara. From 1963. She's there somewhere as just like a 30-year-old woman, not an old lady like this lady was.
Oh, we did talk about the Doctor just acknowledging that he's living over there with his granddaughter.
Yes. So that is fueling fan speculation that this Susan Twist lady could be Susan. And that because we're bringing up Susan, letting the audience know who she is, so that maybe we finally get to, you know, complete the story with that character.
Was that a reference to, like, the first Doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the first episode,
Unearthly Child.
I was going to say Timeless Child. Unearthly Child, they're living on Totter's Lane in that junkyard in the TARDIS when Susan's going to school and all that.
Fucking sweet.
So the Doctor should have noticed music being gone, but he was too old and crotchety. He didn't care about music back then.
Time doesn't work that way.
You see, it's timey-wimey.
Time wibbly-wobbly.
Speaking,
it's a series of tubes.
Speaking of time being a little weird, the Doctor, when he's going to take Ruby to the present, asks what month it is, and she says June or July. So when we last saw her, it was Christmas Day. In Space Babies, they go back to Christmas Day, so then they're all wearing the same clothes. She's only been gone a little bit. So in between these first two episodes, has she been with the Doctor for like 6 or 7 months? And that's why she's maybe a little... Some fans have said that like she seems too like at ease with everything and not like scared enough or weirded out enough. But if we've jumped 6 months and she's already been on a bunch of adventures with the Doctor, that might help with that.
Maybe that's a remnant of like potentially an episode shuffle, like they just rearranged episodes.
Well, I think it's supposed to reference when the end of this season is. So I think we're ending the season with a two-parter on Earth with UNIT during Ruby's contemporary time. So I think we're going to have some adventures and then go back to there. So I think when it was written, RTD knew about when the season was going to air, but maybe not exactly when. Terry.
Did you guys know that...
Wait, Terry. Go ahead, Cody.
Oh, okay.
Did you guys know that the sonic screwdriver could suck all the sound out of the entire area?
Is that what he was using?
Yeah, that's the sonic.
It looks so weird. I thought it was...
I'm bored. It's the sonic screwdriver. It's the sound screwdriver, and it does something with sound.
Hey. Okay, and it was a battle between the sonic screwdriver and a tuning fork, which
it was
actually
cool as fuck.
Thought that was super cool.
I really like the whole, like, one trick works once, because now he just can't do that again. It's so ominous.
Yeah, it's like Matt Smith when he does the shush thing to James Corden. Like, it works one time.
Speaking of ominous, I haven't gotten to gush about some of these things, but having an actor that can just, like, change their vocal register while talking and then just, like, scream at you in this hyper-masculine vocal fry.
You need
a drag queen, and one of the best there is.
Dude, it was fucking so good.
That is,
and the singing?
Horror soup. That was... that the dichotomy there freaked me the fuck out. It made the villain. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. So the parallels with Jinx Monsoon and NPH, like both of their characters able to do that, no problem. Like they had their personas and then they switch into this like horror aspect
and
side of it.
He was doing it with like accents and tone and she was doing it with song. And mm-hmm. And just like, yeah, and just like really going hard. Right away at the beginning when she's talking to that composer guy, and she's like, but it's so sad. And it was just awesome.
My
just right away, like, oh, okay. I like this.
Oh, and her makeup design, like as she got more powerful, like it got darker and creepier. So at the end there, she like had black on the inside of her lips, and it's just, mm-hmm. oh,
and like a
so good
darker brown around her eyes.
the way they could contort their face and just be almost like Jim Carrey villainous. Mm-hmm. Like, yes. Oh, it was so good.
Fuck. And her eye roll. The best.
Still rolling.
The slowest eye roll in the world. It's just Uncanny Valley. Jinx Monsoon is Uncanny Valley, vocally and physically.
I think she was the season 4 RuPaul's Drag Race winner. People love that shit.
Dude, and shout out to costume. Like, they looked incredible as Maestro.
In the making of, there's a lot of focus on the costume and the design of Maestro. And RTD said they spent more time than they have ever spent on a character design, just having meetings and Zoom calls and, like, you know, tests. And then he's like, didn't have to do any of that, because once Jinx showed up, it was just Jinx and the wardrobe and the makeup department just got together and figured it out, and it was perfect.
It was very good.
Cody, do you think the kids could have watched this episode, or do you think it was too much?
It would destroy them forever.
I think it was maybe too much.
It was kind of scary.
Oh my
God.
Yeah.
Being sucked into a bass violin and a timpani?
Oh yeah.
That was horror.
Well, the fear that the doctor and Ruby had when they were hiding.
Yeah.
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 I think showed the danger.
Oh,
the doctor is really harping on, like, how afraid he is.
That was very Inglourious Bastards-esque, where you're, like, underneath and, like, they're walking outside. Oh, yeah.
Oh, like the opening.
Yeah, the opening.
It.
That's kind of what I really love about this whole overarching villain that's going on, is that the doctor doesn't know how to battle this. And he feels incredibly helpless. And I love that struggle of, like, oh, how is he going to figure this out? How is he going to find the power, or, like, the trickery of, like, a game of catch? And, like, that one trick thing with the Sonic. Like, he's trying his best, but it's like they're just easily kicked out right off the bat. And it's just like, I can't keep doing this.
And he did fail. It took the Beatles to finish the job.
Yeah. So I'm kind of wondering if we're even going to get to see, like, a super doctor, or is it going to be a lot of outside sources helping him complete what needs to happen?
Well, I mean, we're going to have UNIT. We're going to have Rose, Donna's daughter. My assumptions about Ruby are that she is one of these children of the... Toymaker, or one of the Legion, and that we're going to find out she's the powerful thing that saves everybody. And we get a little bit of that here. We get Jinx hearing the song inside of her and being like, it's not possible that he could have been there when you were born. It doesn't make any sense. And then when they're doing the There's Always a Twist song, we see Harbinger again poke his head out of the closet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a Harbinger. He's there to let you know that something's coming.
But he, like, slunk back into the room when everyone was dancing.
Yeah, right? It was like, yeah. So he popped his head out and was like, soon. Not the right time.
The jurors aren't ripe for the harbinging.
He just liked the song. All right, well, I think we've done pretty good. Do you want to do some tweets?
Ooh.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
Wait, what do you got to say, Terry?
You want to do some costume talk while I pull these up?
Oh, sure. Second episode, for sure. Fucking loved everything. Like, Ruby looked fucking great. The doctor in his blue pinstripe suit. Like, just very TARDIS look as well. Yeah.
Oh,
so good.
In one of the interviews, he says he escapes the drum by the power of his afro.
That's awesome.
Jinx, overall, perfect in everything. Like, just silhouette and just what they were able to do movement-wise with it. And, like, there's definitely, like, in theater, like, you wear the costume, don't let the costume wear you. And, like, they definitely embraced that and just took it and made it a part of themselves. But in Space Babies, when the doctor took off his jacket, like his top shirt, just like, oh, like you could see muscles shape and outline.
Oh, she was ripped.
And then, oh, he's got an ass.
Oh, he does. Like, yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they both I'm do. Like,
he is banging for sure.
Let me ask
oh my God.
Have we ever seen a doctor wear jeans before? And what do you think of the Levi's he was wearing before they got dressed to go into the 60s? I'm not a fan. The doctor wearing jeans.
I don't think we've seen jeans.
No, we haven't. This is the first time. Huh. And it is bad. Don't put the doctor in Levi's, please.
Yeah, but this doctor is more like immersed in the scene with like Earth people. Like you've seen him in nightclubs and stuff like that. And like he's not afraid to mingle and stuff. So he has to dress to what they have. He can't be running around like David Tennant was in a suit the whole time.
Right. And if you were to see him at a club wearing those fucking jeans, he'd move on to the next ripped hot dude.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. I didn't love the purple dress of Jinx's. And that in the interviews with the costume designer, she had seen a dress like that that she just fell in love with and was kind of going to do it no matter who they cast. I don't think it worked for Jinx.
Yeah. It, yeah.
Hey, anyway, we got some tweets. B Birdmoth at B_Bird_Moth says, Shudi and Millie are killing it, even if I have issues with some of the choices in the stories themselves. Devil's Chord was just brilliant, though, despite my issues. It's got me more invested than ever in the subplot, because whatever's going on with Ruby is uniquely creepy. Now you guys say something so that people continue to tweet at us.
That's pretty accurate, and I agree.
Thanks, Cody. Okay. Janelle Hobbs of J. Christine Nate says, I think they both were fine as is, but it feels like we are fast-forwarding through episodes and the whole season. First, we already know a decent amount was cut from both of these episodes, specifically vital joke setup scene in Space Babies, and it shows. I didn't know that, so maybe I'll have to look into that. And second, with only 8 episodes, RTD is speedrunning the companion-doctor relationship. Because of this, some of the emotional beats really don't land for me, because there is no real build-up or resolution to their relationship. That's probably my major complaint. So now for the good. Gibson and Gatwa are killing it, and both Golda Rashuvel and Jinx Monsoon put in stellar performances. I think that's the Bridgerton lady. And the show continues to look great visually. As for all the mystery boxes, I am actually way more intrigued by Susan Twist than The One Who Waits. If this was 20 years ago around the time of Series 1, we would all be on the message boards arguing if it was the same actor or not. Yeah, I guess before IMDb, we'd all be like, no, I swear it's the same actress. And we would just never know.
Holy smoke. So,
that's
like,
great. More community.
Janelle's just on a different level of Doctor Who. She's on a... Is it she?
Mm-hmm.
She's on a Jake level, and we can't really compete or contend with that at all.
Yeah, it's nice to hear you admit it.
Follow-up question to the tweet. Did they cut all the good parts from Space Babies?
Yep.
And where are they?
They're next week.
Was the joke the ship looking like a butt and then saving them was making
it
fart?
Oh my god. RTD just cannot fucking help himself. I forgot to even bring that up.
I chuckled.
All you have to do is have the TARDIS just pull the ship to the place they want to go, or the space station. We've seen it 1,000 times. We're all okay with it. But having it...
Yeah, the TARDIS hauled a planet once.
Having it fart its way to hyperspeed... And then the doctor just ghosting. Like, how's it going to stop? You just killed all those babies. They're going to crash to that planet.
No, the society they're going to will be like, all right, we'll
just set up our space station catcher.
Yeah.
That motherfucker. Like, it's bad enough that he's doing an episode of babies, but like how many decades of people shitting on the Slitheen does he need to hear to be like, just stop it, dude?
I think I like the Slitheen episodes, actually.
I think they are getting more appreciation.
I I think I like them.
Yeah, that's the one you have to pick when you win the game.
I honestly was thinking about picking those ones. Because it's a multi, isn't it? Or it's is a two-part, it just one? Yeah. Yeah.
Is it bad that we're probably like 5 months away from that and I've already written the game? Like, come up with all my 50 lists?
Enough time to double check the answers.
There was no AI, although I did ask AI to give me some ideas for top 50 lists. Okay. James Swift at James Swift 95 says Space Babies was great, but just a little too RTD. The monster.
Oh no.
The monster and how they move the station at the end was just too much like this of the. Hey, we're literally just saying that. Devil's Court is my favorite episode of the era so far of this new RTD era. I think I agree with that. I mean, I really like the Neil Patrick Harris one, but got a little long in the tooth at the end. And the costume designer did say, like, Jinx's final costume was like an homage to Neil Patrick Harris's costume, where he's like the band in the band leader thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just thinking about that. Like that costume was kind of neat when they're doing like the bard fight.
She also said those like gold tassels around the buttons took her a week to sew on.
Oh, they looked so good though. So good.
She said. Props she said they'd you. Take a normal person a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who did it?
The costume designer.
Damn. That's... Wow.
It's dedication.
The costume designer also makes most of the clothes. Okay. Ode_Ollie says, I tried to keep these short. I apologize, this is going to be long.
hell yeah.
Regarding Space Babies, Shudi just is the Doctor. He nails the characterization so well, feeling really familiar, but still like something new. And the openness that 15 has works with his performance. Millie's performance is great. We're already so invested in her, and she manages to feel different to Rose, even if a few similarities are there. The story is very much a reintroduction to the show, and while it's not the best opener we've ever had, it's still funny and compelling despite all the silliness. Okay, Devil's Cord. The threat is really amped up here, with the supernatural elements both changing the show and working really well against Shudi's performance. Casting choices aside, the Beatles being in this works surprisingly well. Being used as a plot point and not gratuitously lets it feel like less of a mocking appearance than the song would have had us believe. And Jinx Monsoon makes Maestro feel in the same vein as Toymaker and gives Shudi a very different villain to play against, balancing camp with threat. So far, I'm not sure if the meta aspects are working or are borderline too far, but I trust RTD to pull it off. And the arcs so far are interesting. Susan Twist is an intriguing presence. I'm curious who noticed her on first viewing. None of you guys. I didn't either. I had to read it on the internet.
Yeah, every story has a twist.
Oh, yeah. There's always a twist. So that also makes me wonder if it's this lady's real name or if they're just like faking her name in the credits. Because it is the Susan Twist. She's going to be Susan. Anyway. I didn't look in IMDb to see if she like has other credits. he goes on.
She does.
Even if the one who waits does feel a little forced at the moment, very excited as always to see what you all think. Thanks, Ollie.
Well, you're gonna get to find out what we think.
Here you are.
You've made it to this point, and we're talking to you directly.
Here we are.
Yesterday, I posted our War Games episode, and we got multiple tweets saying people were really excited to see what you guys thought of that one.
What did we think of that one?
Yeah, what did
you
we
all
think?
Liked it.
All right.
Nice.
All right.
Good. Cool. Good energy. Cool.
I was hoping to have put out our Human Nature Family of Blood episode before shooting season started, and I failed.
You're fired.
Not only did I not finish it, didn't even start it.
Does that mean we're all fired?
Oh, so we shouldn't pod on Sunday?
Hey, Cody.
Hey, Jake.
Who's your Space Babies MVP?
Oh, God.
Me, for watching it.
For not falling asleep.
I didn't fall asleep, so I mean, that's good, right? The writer? No. Bridgerton lady. Producer? Producer Tatters?
Looking it up.
Okay. Oh, wait.
Golda... Oh, no. Rocheville?
Golda Rocheville. Did a stand-up job of playing the comedic relief with the occasional serious notes, and I appreciated her.
So the TARDIS wiki says Susan Twist played Gina Scalzi. I don't know who that possibly could have been in Space Babies.
Would she have been one of the signing off?
Oh, probably.
Oh,
clever. I remember one of them being an older gal.
Sam, who's your MVP?
Shooty.
For Space Babies.
Yep.
Jill, who's your Space Babies MVP?
Oh, man. I'll go Ruby for Space Babies.
Millie Gibson?
Nice.
Yep, Ruby.
Alex?
Love that.
I'm going to go with monster design, because that monster did look pretty terrifying. Mm-hmm.
And the actor did something on their YouTube channel where he had like a GoPro on his head while he was walking around. It was fun. Terry.
I'm actually choosing the actor of the Bogeyman, Robert Strange.
Here in America, so we strange. Say Boogeyman. And we say boogers, not no, bogeys.
Bogeyman.
Boogerman.
The Boogerman. I'm going with set design. It's not in the TARDIS wiki yet who did it, but I thought the ship both above and below looked great. There's something in the making of on how they made all the snot that was just like hanging off the walls. It was really cool. It was clever and smart.
Oh, when the snot fell on Ruby.
Ugh.
And then you find out what it is.
Phil Sims as production design.
Is anyone not picking Jinx for Devil's Cord?
No shot.
I might pick Murray Gold.
Okay.
Writing.
Highly up for consideration.
So we got an RTD, we got a Murray Gold. Terry, who are you picking?
Jinx Monsoon.
You're the one who said no.
No, you didn't tell us we were jumping to the next episode yet. Well, you said for Space Babies the whole time.
Yeah, but so now I'm saying now it's time for the next one. Is anyone not picking Jinx Monsoon?
Jake, I followed you.
Well, I was saying no as in how dare you suggest anyone else other than Jinx Monsoon.
Well, we got Murray Gold. Murray Gold was good.
Yeah, the plaque is already in the mail to Jinx. It's, yeah.
All right, well, I think we're all agreed on then. For next time, it's the Stephen Moffat episode. All accounts are that it's a fucking banger. And that's everything I know, because I try to avoid spoilers for the most part.
Did you watch the after credits next time?
Yeah, there's not much there.
There's not much there, but they're on a war-torn planet. Yeah.
They have released a longer trailer, but I didn't watch it.
Okay.
I do have one more thing. In the second episode, when they walked out of the TARDIS, everything seemed darker tones, not as bright and colorful, and I wonder if that was on purpose or if I'm just...
Well, the whole time they were trying to shoot all that stuff outside, it was pouring rain. Might have been that.
Oh.
What episode?
Later, the Devil's Cord. So later in the episode when I found out all the music was gone, I was like, oh, maybe that's why. Maybe it was just like a more somber looking...
Well, yeah, it was supposed to be more smoggy than it was normally.
Yeah.
It had that feel to me immediately from them stepping off the TARDIS.
And then when they restored music and you could hear the church bells and everyone singing, like, the scene felt brighter. So I thought that was very good direction-wise. That was really cool.
Speaking of direction, the director was freaking out on the day that they were shooting that stuff on the sidewalk because it was raining all day. And there's one shot they needed to be like at sunset. And it was them basically going back into the TARDIS and dancing on the sidewalk. And so he put in, because there is a scene during the song where they have like the sprinklers going and everyone's got umbrellas. So he made sure to put in when they come out of the building that they're still holding the umbrellas so that they could have the umbrellas on the sidewalk or the crosswalk.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. Oh, he was a really interesting guy. He's just like this little gravelly voiced dude. And he was just like, he had like a ton of the stuff in the episode was practical. There's like, if they could avoid using CGI, they did. Like they, when the piano like flies out of the room and goes down the hallway, they did that with puppetry and strings and stuff instead of like just CGI. And even with like the floating notes, they had like real reams of floating notes that they were using as reference points for the CGI to get put in later so that they could see like where they wanted it and how they wanted it to act.
I'm actually looking at a photo of that scene right now, and just that they made like lines of music notes to wrap around Ruby was so good.
Like, directors who know how special effects work, like use, like direct their stuff for the special effects. So like you're putting in reference points or you're putting in lighting points, and it makes the special effects so much easier and better looking when they have those things. And this guy just knew that. And so when you're coming off of a bunch of very poorly done talking babies, it's just like, oh, this is the way you do all that. And like Jinx coming out of the pianos, they had a hollow piano and they had her fucking crawling under there and hopping out. It was...
Jeez.
There's a shot in the making of where she's standing there looking at it and she goes, everyone's talking to her. She's like, well, I'm just going to get in there then. Just like down on all fours crawling into a piano. It was good. Okay. Alex, do the song. This has been Married to Who, our episode on both Space Babies and the Devil's Chord. If you'd like to participate and give us your thoughts, you can do so on our Twitter page, Married to Who Pod. On behalf of myself, Jake, Cody, Sam, Jill, Alex, and our producer, Terry, thank you so much for listening. Please join us next time. Be-do-do-do.